AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. It was another defensive day for the grain markets, or was it another example of professional trading funds going on the offense and adding to short positions? The cattle complex was higher. Hogs shrugged off early losses to push to new contract highs.
Live from beneath a manageable moon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Matt Tranel from Ever.Ag. Directly following the news, Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, say hello to the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
You sound powerful this afternoon.
I'm fired up, baby. Fired up.
Man, oh man.
Service restored, homie.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Congrats. Glad to hear it.
Thank you. Thank you. I have so many people to thank. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that you do. And, you know, the guys running the power crews right at the top of that list, huh?
They fixed it and split. Yeah.
Nice.
They're gone. Yep.
Nice. You like guys that step in and do the job, don't you?
Got to love that kind of thing. Absolutely. Because
right.
I'm not in a position to climb up that pole at all.
You're not a lineman?
No. No, I'm not even a line boy.
Have you played one on TV?
No, not even a line boy.
Okay.
No.
I see.
Just a regular man. Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis.
Yeah.
It is Tuesday afternoon, and we are going to talk dairy. Okay? Class 3 milk futures lower today. We're coming off of 3 days with solid gains and a nice move from last week's low. But today, May milk futures, Class 3 milk futures, saw an inside trading day with a high range open and a low range close. Matt Tranel from Ever.Ag is going to be here, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the milk market, the dairy market. And one of the things that I want to talk with Matt about is how the dairy market seems to be handling the discovery, the confirmation of HPAI in some of the dairy herds, and uncertainty over how consumers are going to react to that. I mean, we've seen some terrible reactions in the cattle trade, not so much in the milk trade. So
that's interesting.
We'll see what Matt thinks about that. And, of course, we got Matt Bennett standing by. He's going to be here with some perspective on price action here in just a moment. All right, let's get to the markets.
Chip, wheat futures opened to lower and stayed south of unchanged for most of the session. USDA rated 56% of the U.S. winter wheat crop in good to excellent condition. That's unchanged from the previous week. But it did nothing to encourage short covering in wheat futures. Uncertainty over the flow of wheat from Russia is increasing due to more rules and regulations, read that as export fees on Russian grain exports. May, soft red winter wheat futures opened lower and fell through support at 560. That close below 560, Chip, points to a test of support at the bottom of the sideways trading range near 540. July HRW wheat futures 10 and 1/4 cents lower at 574 and a quarter. July SRW wheat down 8 1/2 to 572. July spring wheat closed at 657 and 3/4. Chip, that's down 1 1/4 cents today.
We've seen this before, and it seems to be happening a bit right now again. The Russian exporters seem to be getting in their own way. That it's going to continue for a little bit. They're going to get it all hashed out, and then they'll be back in the export business.
Timely rains for the Brazilian Safrina corn crop are encouraging professional funds to stay on the short side of the corn market. World Weather Inc. says most of the Safrina corn areas of Brazil will have favorable soil moisture, while conditions will remain a bit too dry in Paraguay, Western Paraná, and in Mato Grosso do Sul. Pro Farmer South American crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor puts the Brazilian corn crop at 112 million metric tons, unchanged from last week. Dr. C cut his Argentine corn crop estimate by 2 million metric tons to 53 million metric tons this week due to heavy insect and disease pressure. May corn futures 4 1/4 cents lower, 4.31 1/4. July corn down a nickel, 4.42 1/2. December corn futures closed at 4.68 1/4, down 4 3/4 cents, Chip.
Insects and disease. That's a new one that we haven't really talked too much about in that Argentine corn crop. We'll have to dig into that some more.
Soybean futures posted a high range open and closed near session lows. Bean oil limited strength in the bean market early, and the inability of meal to hold on to early session gains dragged bean prices lower late in the day. Crop advisor Dr. Michael Cordonnier puts the Argentine bean crop at 51 million metric tons and the Brazilian crop at 145 million, both unchanged from the previous week. USDA will update its estimates of South American production in Thursday's supply and demand report. May beans were 7 cents lower, 11.74 1/2. July beans down 6 1/2, 11.87 3/4. November beans closed at 11.78 1/4. That's down 6 cents on the day.
Should see some additional position squaring ahead of that those reports on Thursday.
Well, July cotton today was 55 points lower, 87.84. On your livestocks, fat cattle futures posted back-to-back higher closes with support stemming from gains in the boxed beef market. June live cattle spiked resistance at 175 before pulling back to close just below that level. June live cattle $1.52 1/2 higher today, 174.85. The October contract was up 157 1/2 to 175.72 1/2. And May feeder futures, $2.27 1/2 higher to close at 239.45. Snoutside. Hog futures made another run to new contract highs, with May futures closing higher for a fifth consecutive session, Chip. May hogs were 90 cents higher, 98.77 1/2. The June contract up 65 to 108.57 1/2, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. Basketball's over.
Yeah. It's over.
Yeah.
And I guess we got to find something else to do now.
Yeah. Hello, Cubs. We'll have to pay attention there for a little while. Hey, the funds just like the sell side of these grains right now, don't they?
Yeah. Heading into the growing season. You know, yeah. I mean, you look at several of these commodities, you know, obviously oil's off a little today, but, you know, gold and silver just keep running higher. Yeah. You know, you've got several of these commodities that have been pretty impressive here lately. I guess corn and beans haven't gotten the memo, though. You know, it seems like the funds are perfectly content holding on to this short position. I think most people feel like this report will have a little more friendly numbers, you know, on corn, just due to stocks being a bit of a surprise on that quarterly stocks report. But I don't think the funds are concerned one bit, just from the way that they're currently trading.
Yeah. You know, if it turns out, Matt, that the grains are going to have to play some catch up on inflation, it could turn around in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it could turn around. The thing is, it's going to turn around in the face of what we would call fairly bearish fundamentals. Now, obviously, there's some stuff going on down, you know, with bugs in Argentina, corn shunt or stunt, whatever they're calling it, 10 to 15% yield drop in the areas that they've got it. So that could definitely play a bit of a role. But when you look at the U.S. balance sheet, it's still, even at 90 million acres, I'll tell you what, if you have any growing season at all, it's going to be really hard not to have two straight years of 2 billion carry. And boy, the last time we saw that, you know, corn prices were definitely under 4. So, yeah, I mean, if we do catch up on inflation, yeah, I mean, you could go up pretty quickly. But at the same time, I don't know that that'd be my marketing plan.
Yeah, there's a lot of headwinds to that. You're exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, buddy, thanks. We'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
All right, Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. Coming up next, we're going to talk about what's going on in the Class 3 milk futures, the dairy industry in general. Matt Tranel, Everett.ag, here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us on this Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
We're going to talk markets, 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 and okay. The Class 3 milk market in particular. You okay? Everything all right?
I think I'm okay.
Okay.
Wait. Yeah, I'm fine. Yep.
All right.
No, you good?
I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you like weren't getting some sort of a power surge or anything going over there.
Oh, no. This is just my normal state of being. But, you know, we should pull ourselves together. I think we've got a show coming up this afternoon, don't we? Have we got to do that yet today? Is that today?
Yeah, I think that's what we're doing right now.
We're doing it now? This is it?
The last I knew, I mean, everything feels like the show so far.
No, I'm all freaked out and nervous. Why would you say something like that?
All right, let's get to it. We're going to talk Class 3 milk futures. Matt Tranel, Ever.ag, is our guest analyst today. Matt, it's good to see you again. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. First time we talked was at the World Dairy Expo over in Madison. I believe I got that right, don't I?
Yep, that is accurate.
Very good. Okay. I don't know how much time we need to spend on this, Matt, but I want to bring it up because you look at the volatility that was added to the cattle complex, the beef trade, by the HPAI detection in dairy cattle and the uncertainty over what it might mean to consumer attitudes toward food safety. And it's just like it's shocking the amount of volatility that has come into the markets there. And then you look at the milk market, Matt, and it's just kind of slow and steady wins the race kind of attitude seems to be what's going on in there. They've taken HPAI in stride. What's going on?
Yeah, so I think a little bit it has to do with where the markets were going into that news. So when you look at the beef market, we were at essentially all-time record highs. And so if you sneezed at the market in any different way, markets were probably going to see some profit taking and maybe a lower price as a result. Whereas alternatively, Class 3 was already low going into that story. And as a result, a lot of the negativity was already in the market, and maybe there was only so much ammo from a fearful standpoint to push markets lower. So when we went into that, the front end of the market, your May contract, we were already trading sub $16. And so I think there was just a little bit of hesitancy to push markets lower, given that over the course of the last 15 months or so, really that $14 to $15 area was already the low, and without a ton of new information, there wasn't really enough ammo to kind of push it further beyond that point.
Gotcha.
So I think a little bit of that had to happen there.
Gotcha. What is the talk, the chatter about this event in the dairy industry? Have you had a chance to talk to other participants in the market and just kind of feel them out, what they think?
So there's a lot more nervousness in regards to the consumer front, as you did already kind of mention towards. Yeah. I think from the supply standpoint, a lot of the dairy producers that we talked to, a lot of the industry folks say that, yes, this virus could spread, and yes, it could make production tight in a specific territory for a period of time. But a lot of these cows are recovering after 10 to 14 days. And so for the most part, it would be a short-term supply crunch, geographically speaking. Mm-hmm. Certainly, it does it does seem like this is airborne. And so it could spread to different regions at the same time. And it could be a little bit more of a crunch than that. But the primary concern remains in the consumer, ensuring yes. and educating the consumer that the product is indeed safe. Any affected milk would not enter into the food supply chain. And even if it did, pasteurization would take care of it. So Perfect. Everything is safe. And I don't think we can, I think we have to kind of harp on that as much as we can, that the product is safe. And I think for the most part, if there were to be some type of decline in demand, it would probably come from your fluid milk varieties versus like your cheeseburgers. Consumers are probably still going to go out and they're not going to think about it affecting the cheese. So the product is safe, but I do think that the overall industry is concerned about the consumer. And for the most part, I'd say the industry has done a very, very good job educating the consumer in regards to what's going on and that things are safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt, you make a great point about the cheeseburger there, and it just, you know, popped into my head. There isn't anybody out there that's not going to buy a pizza because of this.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Yeah, that's the last thing you're thinking of when you're ordering a pizza. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That I think that's really good perspective. We can't ignore it. We can't ignore the possibility that class three milk futures might experience something like what has happened in the cattle trade, but at the same time, you don't plan on it. You don't plan on it either, I don't think, right?
No, I mean, you never necessarily plan on it, but you have to be cognizant of the fact that it could happen. And I think a lot of dairy producers out there that are being realistic with the market know full well that the consumer is the primary driver of their milk check. And quite frankly, they understand that consumers could be on a little bit of edge for a period of time. And thus, they are managing their risk appropriately. Gotcha. Given that information.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Well, and you know, the market is demanding a little bit more attention when it comes to risk management too, just simply because we've had a really nice move from last week's low to the upside in class three milk futures, right?
Absolutely. So if you've been kind of paying attention to the, specifically the May through the July futures for 2024 since last Thursday, and that was kind of following, some of our export data, for which we had a really nice number printed for cheese exports, and futures in that period of time rallied $1 to $1.50, and beyond that we saw a little bit of a rally as well, just not as big of a rally, given that futures were already holding in there a pretty steep premium. But when you look at May, we closed in on $17 again. I know that's not lighting the world on fire given today's cost of productions and whatnot. June was $17.50, and July was able to creep above $18. Certainly, like I said, not lighting the world on fire, but at the end of the day, it sure beats the pants off of $15.50, $16 milk that we were previously seeing. So, yeah, it's been a nice little look for us. Cheese on the CME Spot Dairy Index has continued to be bid through yesterday. We saw a little bit more selling action today, so that does show that there is still some cheese out there, but the market is still in there fighting, and some buyers are still interested in acquiring the product. So, it's definitely a move to take another look at the very least.
Okay. All right. Talk to me a little bit more about that export comment that you made, Matt. What is the product that that is in most demand in the export market?
Yeah, so the cheese exports were the one that really kind of made your eyes open up a little bit more.
Okay.
And it makes sense. Cheese prices were down towards $1.40, whereas world prices are closer to $2 in both Oceania and also in Europe. So we would expect that type of price discrepancy would acquire additional business. Mm-hmm. And so in February, we actually saw 95.6 million pounds leave our shores. And that was the largest monthly export number that we've seen since June of 2022. So that was pretty impressive.
Holy
the
smokes.
Biggest buyer, okay. The biggest buyer that we saw was Mexico. And that makes sense. Proximity wise, their peso is strong, so they have more purchasing power for our product. But that was the highest monthly volume that Mexico has had on record. And so that alone, since that report came out, block and barrel cheese is up 15 cents on the spot dairy index. And I mean, we're only at $1.55, but we're closing in. We're 45 still cents away from the world market, which I mean, maybe we continue to creep in on that potential price. I'm not banking on it myself. I think we have a little more ways to go, but overall, our cheese inventories are still quite burdensome.
Okay, all right, but boy, it's sure nice to have a market like Mexico, as close as it is, and as willing a buyer of the product that that we've got. It's going to help out, no question. Okay,
absolutely.
Yep, we've talked to Manside. Great perspective on the HPAI in the dairy. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the production side and some of the changes that dairies are going through on the production side. We'll do that next here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 10 and one quarter cents lower at 574 and one quarter. July SRW wheat down 8 and one half cents to 572. May corn futures were 4 and one quarter cents lower at 431 and one quarter. December corn futures closed at 468 and one quarter. That's down 4 and three quarter cents. May soybean futures 7 cents lower, 1174 and a half. November beans closed at 1178 and one quarter. That's down 6 cents on the day. July cotton today, 55 points lower at 87.84. On your livestocks, June fat cattle $1.52 higher at 174.85. May feeder futures $2.27 higher at 239.45. June lean hog futures up 65 cents, 108.57 and one half. Hey, visit tryprofarmer.com. Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you're with us. We are in the middle of a conversation with Matt Tranel from Ever.ag talking about what's going on in the dairy industry, Class 3 milk futures in particular, and trying to zero in on some risk management strategies here. We've talked a lot about the demand side of the market, Matt. Let's go over to the production side. What are we learning from the latest production reports?
Yeah, so the latest production reports still indicate that milk production on a year-over-year basis is indeed lower. It's been that way for quite some time now. When the February milk production report came out, the number came in at 1.3% negative growth year-over-year. And it's been pretty consistent right in that territory. Now, when you look at the solids report that comes out, it would actually indicate a different story, however, as solids are showing that there's a 0.9% growth rate, which is just kind of telling us that dairy producers have answered the call from their buyers. They are being asked to ship less water in the milk and more components within the milk. And so, yeah, that number on the production report is a little bit skewed. It's you have to kind of dive a little bit deeper within that number, which definitely shows that we're still producing plenty of components within the milk. So
yeah. Hey, Matt, is that diet? Is that genetics? Is it yes to all of the above? What is it?
I think it's all the above. I mean, dairy farmers have certainly adjusted their breeding programs in order to breed for more components. It's definitely a nutritionist changing rations that do provide higher butter fat and protein levels. So I think it's all the above.
Okay. All right. As long as we're talking about the breeding program, I got a message from a Wayne, a listener. His name is Wayne here just recently. And he was talking about, he's a dairyman, but he was talking about how his replacement program has changed so that he's not making any more heifers than what he absolutely knows he's going to need. And I think that's pretty consistent across the industry right now, just simply because of the value of that crossbred calf coming out of the dairy cows, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, no matter kind of where you're at in this country, I mean, we've been hearing lately that day-old calves, I mean, you're getting anywhere from $700 to $1,000 a head, which has been an incredible revenue infusion into the business compared to, I mean, I grew up on a dairy, and I remember that when calves were $500, and that was phenomenal, and calves were worth like $50 or nothing at all. So
yeah,
it's incredible what they're worth. And yeah, I mean, I was in Colorado, I've been in Wisconsin and all throughout the country, and most dairies are continuing to say that they're breeding for enough heifers to maintain their herd. If they are expecting to do some type of an expansion, they're maybe adjusting it a little bit further than that, so they don't have to chase, fresh 2-year-olds right on the open market. But, for the most part, beef on dairy is going to remain as a very consistent part of their future.
Well, and what it seems to me is happening is that the genetics on those dairy herds are becoming a closed circle. It's not like they're reaching outside of their known genomics to bring something different or unknown into their genetics, are they?
Yeah, we're not seeing a ton of that. No,
right,
not really.
Right, I don't know what kind of an impact this is going to have, but at some point, Matt, doesn't it have an impact on overall? I don't know. I'm getting into stuff that I think about and I wonder about, but I don't know if it's going to have a negative influence or a negative impact on dairy genetics or not. Do you think about it?
I mean, I guess we don't put a ton of thought into it, maybe, yeah, as maybe what we should. I guess our line of thinking is more so along the lines of with inventory staying maybe stagnant, what that does to milk price more longer term is maybe the avenue that I kind of focus on. And I think that does have a story. I think it will pop up here, and I do think that's going to make dairy farming very enjoyable in the future once demand can kind of catch up to maybe some of our previous levels that we had seen, our 1% growth rate that we typically like to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If we can maintain a little bit of growth on the production side and bring the demand along with it, everybody should be happy in that industry, I would think. But here we are, and things just a touch out of whack right now. So with all of this, Matt, what's the outlook? Where do you see this Class 3 milk market going?
Yeah, so for now, I do believe that class three is fairly range bound.
Okay.
Two different times, once in mid-October, once in late February, the class three market was able to touch 19 or at least knock on the door of $19.
Okay.
And we were not able to move above that price for more than a day. And so I think the market is very clearly saying that $19 is our ceiling until something bigger happens in this market, and it would most likely be demand driven that would push us through that type of price. So more domestic
Okay.
use. Right now, year to date, we're down 1% domestic use in regards to cheese. So that would have to flip the script a little bit.
Yeah.
I think your bottom end of class three today is kind of that 15 quarter to 15 and a half dollar price. You look at January settlement, we finished right around 15.20. You look at March, we're right around 15.60. April currently is at 15.55. So I think the market is clearly saying that 15.50, 15 and a quarter is our downside. I think cheese is showing us that anytime we get down to that $1.40 area, we're going to pick up exports, which is going to prevent the market from really seeing
Okay.
much more downside for that particular price. So I think it's right in that range that class three kind of participates in. And it kind of goes back to the I guess in-house we have the old saying that a $19 milk, it's that's kind of the level where the end user starts to say, well, above 19 that is no longer cheap milk. It's
Yeah.
starting to get into the expensive milk. So that's kind of where consumers and end users start to sit on their hands a little bit and look for a better opportunity.
Okay, so here, with prices how they are, and I don't know, does the structure of the market make sense to you right now with the class three milk, the April 1555, May 1667, June 1728, and all the way out to August 1809? So we've got what I would call a carry market. Does that all make sense to you?
It does. I mean, it's very similar
Okay.
to what you would find in a corn market if you have tremendous amounts of inventory.
Yeah.
Ultimately, there's just kind of a carrot dangling off into the future at a higher price that is there for a while. And then as it becomes more and more towards the expiring contract, some of that premium starts to exit that particular contract month. And that's kind of been what's been happening in dairy really for the last 12 months. We've seen carry out onto the future, and as we get into this expiring month, it just kind of seeps away as you would normally see in a lot of other markets as well.
Okay, so then from a risk management point of view, are you looking to out as far as the August and saying, listen, it's at $18, we need to be doing something?
So I would take that a step further, and I'd say we're out to kind of that December time frame even.
Okay.
December has been trading over 18 on at certain points over the course of the last couple of months, and yeah, we've certainly been taking action. Comes down to number one, the client that you're working with and the risk tolerance that they have. If they're a little more adverse to risk, you can kind of manage a certain strategy to that regard. So for a client that can manage a little more of a risky position, I think we're not only using floors such as the insurance products of LGM Dairy or DRP, but we're also considering using and implementing the min-max type structure
Okay.
of strategies. And we would prefer to layer all of those strategies in the closer we are to $19. But I mean, for somebody that doesn't have anything on to this point,
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend having something and putting something into place, just from
Yeah.
a catastrophic type
Sure.
scenario,
Yeah,
because
makes sense.
the hardest thing to get back is lost equity. If somebody doesn't have as big of a risk profile as another, then we'd be primarily focusing on the insurance tools of LGM Dairy, DRP, or DMC through the FSA program.
Gotcha. Yeah, and there are examples, very, very recent examples of why maybe dairy guys should be looking at some of that price protection out there. Matt,
without a
great
doubt.
Great conversation, buddy. Thank you so much for making time, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Chip.
Fantastic. Thank you, Matt. That is Matt Tranel with Ever.ag. All right. We're going to put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk. Davis and I will be right back in a moment.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson. Chip.
You don't have to whisper about it.
No, I do. The dog's asleep. I got a question for you.
Okay.
He's kind of laying there on his side.
Yeah, yeah.
And just a little bit of his tongue. Uh-huh. It's kind of sticking out between his front teeth, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it does that and sometimes it doesn't. What is that? What is that?
I don't know.
What's twitching now? Joe?
Climate change.
Is it climate change?
Obviously.
I had my suspicions. You know, I read this thing earlier today, and as I understand it, the sun is a mighty powerful heat, almost impossible.
Almost.
To go near the sun.
Almost impossible to get close to it.
The moon is much more manageable.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, depending on how much gas is in there.
Right. The moon, of course, our solar system's favorite gas giant.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Maybe we should have gone for like...
I am learning so much from social media.
That was an epic post for the ages. I appreciate you sending me that. It was quite
a deal. Welcome. You're welcome.
Is Matt Bennett predicting a 2 billion bushel carryout for the second consecutive year on 90 million acres of corn? Did I get those numbers together?
Could very well be.
Uh-huh.
Could very well be. That's the kind of thing that gets a market looking for demand, isn't it?
You would think. Yeah.
That's the bottom line from the conversation that we had, the quick conversation that we had with Bennett at the start of the show. Absolutely. It's hard to argue that. And the thing is, Matt Tranel, a couple of times in our conversation about what's going on in milk, reinforced what Matt Bennett said about the grains. Mm-hmm. When he'd say things like, well, if we get these milk prices low enough, then all of a sudden the export demand shows up. Yeah. Yeah, cheap prices fix cheap prices because the demand comes back to the market. It can happen very quickly with things like milk and beef and poultry and pork. It takes much longer to get that demand back and to redevelop when we're talking about products like corn, soybeans, and wheat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Fat cattle were poised for a fear-based sell-off when the news of BIAV, which is the bovine edition of bird flu, fat cattle poised for a fear-based sell-off. They were a little toppy there. We were already talking about that. But the dairy sort of absorbed that news. If we're talking, you know, futures in particular, absorbed that news. What it just seemed like the news broke like so quickly. You know, he said that, and I thought, well, no, wait a second. Didn't they find out about the infections at the same time, the dairy guys and the?
They sure did. But
so
condition of the market, of the market set up the reaction, and Matt had it nailed. When you've got cattle prices trading around all time highs, and you throw the amount of uncertainty that bird flu in bovines can bring to the equation, you throw that in and there's going to be a negative reaction. Now with milk prices trading down there around $15 a hundred, that's cheap. Okay. Well, it's a whole lot easier to say, well, we're cheap already. We don't have to get cheaper because of uncertainty.
Okay.
Okay. So all right. I thought it was a great point.
I did
great
too.
Point makes a whole lot of sense.
Super cool. Help me make sense of a min-max strategy.
Let's get somebody else on that can help us do that.
Okay, fair enough.
But basically what you're talking about is in exchange for a minimum price,
mm-hmm.
you are taking on a position that also includes a maximum price. All right.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's limiting risk for you as the seller, but it's also limiting risk for the buyer in this equation. We need to get somebody on to that can explain it better than what I can. I never used them. I never used a min-max or recommended a min-max in any of the risk management that we ever did. I just didn't do it.
Well, could we call it maybe a second cousin to the strangle?
I'm sure that you can, yeah.
Okay.
It's an option strategy.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay. Very good. Dairy cows, numbers are stagnant. He's more focused on demand and growth than really anything else.
Getting
here.
Back to the growth.
Yeah.
Getting back to, let's get it back to where we can kind of look at that 1% annual growth on the production side of things, so that it can account for steady numbers and improved genetics and improved milk production efficiencies. So but we got to have the demand that comes along with it, because as in any livestock market, if you're producing too much, even 1% too much, that's way too much.
Yeah.
And it is reflected in price in a big way. So we need to get back to the demand growth that matches up with the production growth so that we can keep the industry moving forward. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's not it's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any question about that. But nonetheless, it does make a lot of sense. A lot of sense. So
all right. Chile and Alaska, that actually seems to make a little sense, too.
Right. Finally, huh?
Yeah,
below normal temperatures expected up there for April 15th through the 19th. That is the 6 to 10-day outlook. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. Above normal precipitation also expected across the entire Corn Belt. The 8 to 14-day, this is for April 17th through the 23rd. We're already talking about the 23rd of April in this outlook. That's crazy to me. Near normal temperatures in the northern production areas. You've got below normal temperatures expected in North Dakota, South Dakota, and western Nebraska. And then above normal temperatures expected southeast Iowa and points to the east and south of that. Above normal precipitation expected as well. Lance Honig from USDA's NAS tomorrow morning.